Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue our study of St. Matthew with Holy Innocents Martyrs, from Egypt to Galilee, the introduction of the Baptist and the coming one, and Jesus receives a sinner's baptism? Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
You've got casinos operating at 50% capacity with hundreds of thousands of people going through them, and you've got these churches limited to 50 people. I think the proof is in the pudding.
Divorce is really just the kickoff of a lifetime of transition, loss, and instability for kids. And if you're a child of divorce, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Those who view science and faith as enemies understand neither.
Muhammad, he wants you to believe him on force. For Jesus, he does things to make you want to believe him.
Parents trying to attend a virtual conference with a toddler in the living room. Love Issues, etc.
Where it might be just to create this Islamic order.
Well, we spoke recently on the program about self-censorship. You hold a political view and you self-censor. You just keep your mouth shut, which is not always a bad idea. Keeping your mouth shut is usually a better idea than opening it and letting whatever's in your head fall out. But there are times when you have to have a difficult political conversation, or someone just insists on having the conversation with you. How do you do that in a way that, well, you stick by your guns, but it doesn't turn into an argument or a fight or end a friendship or hurt a relationship? How do you do that? Have a conversation on hard political subjects in a loving way and without doing any damage to the truth and avoiding false compromises like, well, you have your truth and I have my truth. Let's just agree to disagree. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about having those hard political conversations in a loving way with Dr. Corey Moss, Associate Professor of History at Hillsdale College. Andrew Egger joins us after that. He's written a column for the Lutheran Witness titled Facts, Fiction, and the Media. We'll discuss reading and watching news as a Lutheran. Then it'll be time to go through the Issues Etc. comment line and our listeners' email, the comment line, 618-223-8382, and our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Joining us to talk about having hard political conversations in a loving way, Dr. Corey Moss, Associate Professor of History at Hillsdale College, author of a column for the Lutheran Witness titled Political Community and Polite Communication. Dr. Moss, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Our politics are so toxic right now, all over the place. How do you respond to a Christian who says, I think it's better just to avoid any controversial political issue in polite conversation?
I suppose my first response would be to second the notion that political discourse is especially toxic now. Not uniquely so, but it can seem that way. And then perhaps also to express my sympathy with the feeling that maybe it's just best to opt out. But then I would want to suggest that that's neither possible nor at the end of the day actually desirable. I might say something like, politics, although we think about it in a very narrow scope these days. I mean, really, in its origins, and I think in a better way of thinking of it, politics simply has to do with how any community lives together. I mentioned in the article that our word politics derives from the Greek word for city, the polis. And so politics is just that way of governing the way that any group of people live together in a city, in a particular place. So it's not really possible at the end of the day to not talk about politics. And then furthermore, especially those of us who are Christians, I think have a real obligation to be engaged in politics, again, broadly understood, the conversation about how we live together, how we order our lives together, what are just policies and unjust policies. So I would perhaps suggest that as tempting as it is to want simply to drop out, as Christians especially, we have a duty to do things that might seem unpleasant, and this is perhaps one of those things.
Give us a little bit of a historical perspective, because we do tend to think that our times are entirely unique. And of course, we're living in an age where our technology ramps everything up, magnifies everything political in a way that people haven't experienced before. But apart from that, Dr. Moss, politics has always been a contentious business, hasn't it?
It really has. And, you know, in our own American context, I mean, the obvious place to look is in something like the run-up to the Civil War, you know, where you have congressmen, for example, physically assaulting one another in chambers, or when you have political violence that makes kind of contemporary violent protests pale by comparison. So this is not unique even in the American context, never mind looking back even further to the kinds of regular political violence, political assassinations, character assassinations that have gone on throughout human history. So this is lamentable, but it's not unique, and arguably it's not even as bad as we're tempted to think it is.
With that said, there is a kind of fatalism or defeatism that a Christian might be tempted to engage in at a time like this and say, well, politics has always been contentious. Look at the founding of our nation, or look at the political struggles at different times. I'm going to jump in with both feet and be as nasty as our means of communication allow me to be.
Right. And that seems to be where things stand, where we can only appear to conceive of politics in terms of winning and losing. And, winning means rallying the base, and so doing and saying things that may not be the most helpful, may not be the most charitable, may not in fact be true, but you need to hear the cheering and you need to motivate people to, pull the lever for X, Y, or Z candidate. And then, of course, along with that comes the belittling of opponents and, quite frankly, a refusal to actually engage in a serious way any of the issues. And so it really does become kind of name-calling, which, as you rightly note, is simply amplified by social media, and so makes the problem worse, at least in this sense. More people are party to it. More people are involved in it.
What did the Greek philosopher Aristotle mean when he observed that man is by nature a political animal?
Well, probably most fundamentally, he simply means this, that man, by his very nature, is meant to live in community with other people. He's meant to live in a polis, in a city, in a community. And that he is not meant to be, an isolated, autonomous individual. But then that raises all sorts of questions. Well, if that just is our nature, to live with other people, how do we do that, given that people tend to have different opinions, different desires, and living together with people can be messy and uncomfortable? If this just is our nature, to be the kinds of people that live together, then we need to think seriously about how to make that possible and how to make that beneficial for all involved.
There was, to put it in kind of that Aristotle context, a protocol for having political conversations. There always has been, and it has been in the past formalized precisely in order to keep things civil. I think about the rules in the Senate or the rules in the House. They're there to keep these men from going at each other's throats and ordering their conversations. There's a certain wisdom in that, isn't there?
Yeah, there really is. And, I mean, to be sure, sometimes those rules can be honored in the breach, but they do serve a purpose. And if we just neglect the rules, well, then we begin to kind of see, you know, what we see today, where one says whatever comes to mind, you know, how no matter how well or how ill-informed it might be, no matter how charitable or uncharitable it might be, and whatever the ramifications of that might be. And so, yeah, the rules, as you say, are there to facilitate serious conversation. And then they don't make it, you know, absolutely and necessarily the case that there will be civil, informed, and helpful conversation. But the rules are there to at least help towards that goal.
Can we, as Christians, at least informally, insofar as we're able to exercise self-control, have a few of those rules for ourselves when we engage in these conversations? What would it look like?
Yeah, really good question. And to the first question, can we have some of these rules for ourselves? I think we can. I think we should. And I think it's worth thinking about what those rules might be and how best to implement them. You know, again, even for ourselves, even in informal conversations over coffee with friends or family members, I suppose some of those might begin with real basics. You know, if we're going to have a conversation, we ought to be clear, at least with ourselves, why we're doing so. What is our ultimate goal? And again, that's perhaps one of the problems of contemporary political discourse, is that the goal, at least the implicit and assumed goal, simply seems to be winning. Whether that means, you know, kind of belittling your opponent or shouting louder than your opponent. But classically understood, that's not the point of conversation, serious conversation and political conversation. That the point is to reach some kind of agreement. And most importantly, to reach agreement on the truth. And so if we're going to have a conversation, we ought to ask ourselves, is this a conversation about the kind of thing on which we could actually reach a true or false answer? Or are we just going to bloviate and offer opinions and argue and bicker? I mean, if it's the latter, maybe the first rule is, well, let's not even have this conversation. This isn't a conversation worth having because it's not the kind of thing that conversation is for. But if we are kind of agreed that we're going to have a conversation because we actually want to reach agreement, and we want to reach agreement in truth, and that means I'm going to have to try to persuade you, and you're going to try to persuade me, and it's going to be the case that maybe I'll admit that I'm wrong. So I'm open to persuasion. So I suppose those would be some of the very, very fundamental ground rules. Know why you're having a conversation, and if you understand that the reason is to reach agreement in truth, begin with the premise that I could be wrong. That's why I need to listen carefully and be open to persuasion myself.
We're talking with Dr. Corey Moss, Associate Professor of History at Hillsdale College, about having hard political conversations in a loving way. We also need to the best of our ability, understand our opponents or our friends' point of view and what they are saying. We'll talk about that next. Church and state, communion fellowship, the church year, baptism, Lutheranism. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is a simple explanation series. It's a pack of 20 pamphlets with solid biblical guidance on various Christian topics. A simple explanation pamphlet is perfect for outreach programs, new member classes, and in the church pews. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. A simple explanation series.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Concordia University Chicago is committed to keeping college affordable for all, and especially for LCMS Lutherans. We have scholarships available specifically for students who are LCMS members. This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, asking you to encourage your student to check out Concordia Chicago at cuchicago.edu. And if you are interested in supporting these scholarships, please find us online at foundation@cuchicago.edu.
Timeless truth that prepares scholars to serve their neighbor in all of life through their various vocations. This is what scholars receive at Wittenberg Academy. If you are looking for a solidly Lutheran online education for your child, consider Wittenberg Academy, where doctrine is sound, academics are rigorous, and relationships are genuine. We offer full-time, part-time, and diploma track options to meet your child's Lutheran education needs. We partner with brick-and-mortar schools and homeschools. You can find out more at wittenbergacademy.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Tuesday, August the 4th, we're talking about having those difficult political conversations in a loving way. Dr. Corey Moss of Hillsdale College is our guest. Dr. Moss, talk about the need for us, as painful as it may be sometimes, to actually try and understand to the best of our ability our interlocutors' ideas.
Yeah, this is hugely important. So I said that if a goal is to reach an agreement in truth, the first thing you're going to want to try to do is to find out, well, do we actually disagree? And so we need to listen to one another very carefully to actually understand what the other person is saying, and quite frankly, perhaps to better understand what we ourselves are saying. And this is one of the problems with human communication. We're inexact, we're imprecise, and sometimes we say things that upon further reflection don't actually represent what we really mean and what we're trying to communicate. And so we want to try to understand our interlocutor. And one of the things that we're going to have to do is to be willing to ask questions and not just assume that, oh, you're a Republican, so you don't even have to speak. I already know what you're going to say. I know what your position is. Or, you know, you're a Democrat. So when you say this phrase, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, just think about recent events with the popularity of the phrase defund the police. Seems to me pretty obvious what that phrase means, but we've seen, you know, a dozen op-eds trying to explain, well, defund the police doesn't actually mean defund the police. Now, my immediate inclination is to say, well, if you don't mean defund the police, then don't say defund the police. But trying to be charitable, I'm willing to say, ah, okay, well, maybe that was inexactly expressed. Tell me exactly what you mean. And once you explain in a way that I understand and can say back to you such that you agree, yes, you understand what I'm saying, then we can talk about where the agreement or disagreement might lie.
You have mentioned here several times agreement in the truth, and that may not be able to be fully realized at the end of a conversation or even after the end of a number of conversations. We might just find places to agree with a lot of disagreement still hanging in the air. That may be the best we can do, right?
It may be, yes. And you know, to say that the goal of serious conversation is agreement in truth, yeah, should not be understood as if this is a goal that's actually attainable. Certainly not, you know, in a 30-minute conversation over coffee in most instances. But if we can reach some level of understanding, you know, even if we don't rise to the level of agreement, if we at least attain some level of understanding, that's progress. And if we understand and understand where our disagreements lie, and even more so, why we have those disagreements. So, for example, you know, what assumptions or presuppositions am I operating with? What assumptions and premises are you operating with? If we have a better understanding of why people hold a certain position and therefore why we disagree with them, that at least lays a foundation for perhaps moving the conversation forward in future.
There is a popular approach to this, which I think gets overused or abused, and that is, well, let's just agree to disagree. And sometimes it's just saying, well, you have your truth and I have my truth. What's wrong,
right,
with, what's wrong with that?
Well, there are all sorts of things wrong with that. I mean, perhaps the most obvious being, if something is true, it is worth knowing. And so if I believe something that is false, I ought to want to know what is true. And it would be derelict of me to say, you know what, let's just agree to let me remain in ignorance. But by a similar token, if what one of my friends believes is false, because he is a friend, I want him to know the truth. And so I don't want to just agree to let him remain in ignorance. Now, again, we're talking especially about in serious matters. If my friend happens to like the Star Wars prequels better than the originals, perhaps we can just agree to disagree because that's really not worth arguing about. But on serious and fundamental matters, and again, if we can kind of come back to the beginning, politics, broadly, and I would say properly understood, is one of those matters where agreeing to disagree doesn't work for very long. Because people who believe different things and therefore value different things and have different understandings of the means by which to secure the things that they value, if we disagree on all these things, we simply can't live together in a peaceful community. What we have instead is a kind of anarchical and chaotic situation where, you know, everyone is doing what seems right in his own eyes. And that's just not a recipe for living together in any sort of civilized, harmonious community.
Why is it important that Christians especially realize that we do not have a monopoly on political wisdom?
Well, it's important that we realize this because, although Christians, perhaps above all, ought to emphasize knowing the truth, speaking the truth, living the truth, we're also going to recognize that all truth is not given us in special revelation. What is given us in Scripture is true, and Scripture contains the single most important truths that we need to know, not only in this life, but for the sake of the next life. But as Luther was fond of saying, you know, God does not teach us in his word how to build boats. So there are lots of questions that we're not going to have the answers to simply because we are, you know, well-catechized and biblically literate Christians. There are questions that are better answered by long human experience or by people who might be, you know, wiser than us in a variety of matters. And so we're going to want to listen to them, even if they are, as with someone like Aristotle, you know, a pre-Christian pagan, or, you know, in the contemporary context, maybe even a non-Christian. Maybe, you know, heaven forbid, someone who stands on the other side of the political aisle from us, that they might know things that we don't know and perhaps that we've not even thought about, and we ought to be willing to consider. They might know something that's true.
The situation we often find ourselves in is simply dividing into parties, whether it be political parties or other identifications which now multiply in our social context.
Oh, that's right.
Why should Christians avoid that kind of classification of our fellow human beings?
Yeah. Well, I mean, partly for the reason intimated in your last couple of words there. Because whether one is a Democrat or a Republican or a Libertarian or whatever the case might be, first and foremost, we're all human beings. And that means we all share something in common. But conversely, it means that as individuals, we have lots of differences. And so if I'm a Democrat or a Republican, that doesn't mean that I, you know, share all of the policy positions or all of the metaphysical assumptions that perhaps underlie, you know, that party and its platform. It's tempting because it's a convenient shorthand. And perhaps, you know, it's easy to say that, well, most Democrats think this way and say that, and most Republicans are on board with these policies. So it's a helpful kind of shorthand. But as is often the case, you know, that kind of shortcut absolves us of the hard work of actually thinking, discussing, attempting to persuade. And so it's at the end of the day, it's a bit of a cop-out to simply categorize people by political affiliation or other kind of identifying markers so as to avoid the hard work of talking together and attempting to reach an agreement in truth.
You advise that we ask more questions than give answers. Of course, we want to give answers, but asking questions moves this thing forward in a way that perhaps just making statements can't. Why is that?
Yeah, that's right. Well, and it's for a whole host of reasons, some of them more fundamental than others. But as we've already mentioned, before we can reach any kind of agreement, we need to actually understand one another's positions. And so I'm going to want to ask questions to make sure that I do actually understand what you're saying, and even more importantly, what you actually mean. But just at a kind of pragmatic level, asking questions kind of reassures your conversation partner that I'm listening and I really am trying to understand. I'm not just sitting here waiting for you to stop talking so that I can spew my next talking point, but I actually am trying to be a participant in a real dialogue. But then from the other side of the equation, asking questions is a little less threatening, it seems to me. So if you believe that someone is wrong, and you do understand not only what they're saying, but why they're saying it, rather than simply saying, well, you're wrong, and let me tell you why, and kind of going into lecture mode. I mean, if you were to open with a question, well, I understand you to be saying this because you believe that this is the case. But if it were the case that, you know, something else, would that change your mind? And it allows your conversation partner to, you know, to think about that and to sincerely engage. And it can be very revealing if they were to say, yeah, you know what, if it turned out that one of my premises was faulty, I still wouldn't change my mind. Well, that's perhaps revealing that the conversation isn't going to go anywhere. If the person is not really willing to give, take, reconsider, be persuaded, then perhaps that goal of reaching agreement is just not going to be possible. And so perhaps it's unfortunately not worth continuing the conversation.
We're talking with Dr. Corey Moss of Hillsdale College about having hard political conversations in a loving way. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're connected to Issues, Etc. A simple explanation series is a pack of 20 pamphlets with solid biblical guidance on various Christian topics, including a new pamphlet on church and state. Learn more by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. A simple explanation series, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August. When we come back, we're going to talk about our mutual moral duty to love one another, even when we profoundly disagree. Stay tuned.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue our study of St. Matthew with holy innocence martyrs from Egypt to Galilee, the introduction of the Baptist and the coming one, and Jesus receives a sinner's baptism? Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org. and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
Here's a new way for you to win the LPR bundle package. Submit a time cue with the show number for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. If your selection wins Soundbite of the Week, we'll send you an I Have Issues t-shirt, an Issues Etc. tote bag, notepad, pen, and bumper sticker. Just send your submission for Soundbite of the Week with a time cue and show number to talkback@issuesetc.org, and you could win the LPR bundle package. Talkback@issuesetc.org.
Trinity Lutheran Church in Vilonia, Indiana, is a mighty fortress that stands as a bulwark against the attacks of the devil, the world, and our sinful flesh. We are located in Jackson County, about 2 miles south of historic Fort Vilonia on State Road 135. Join us every Lord's Day for Sunday school and Bible class at 8:30 and divine service at 9:30. Come and receive the gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation from God's Valiant One, Jesus Christ, who has conquered death and holds the field forever.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Corey Moss is our guest, Associate Professor of History at Hillsdale College and author of a column for the Lutheran Witness magazine titled Political Community and Polite Communication. We're talking about having hard political conversations in a loving way. So speaking of the love part here, Dr. Moss, I'm put in mind of Dr. Robert George of Princeton University, who recently instigated a number of conversations, a series of conversations with Dr. Cornell West. These two men profoundly disagree on politics, but at the outset, they agreed on their mutual moral obligation to love one another. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's huge. And for those who haven't followed or been aware of these conversations between Professors George and West, they regularly illustrate that with reference to one another as brother. And this really, I mean, goes back to where we began. If I don't love you, if I don't care about you, if I'm not concerned for you, then why would I care about reaching agreement with you? Why would I care whether or not you discover and discern and embrace the truth? If I don't care about you, well, then I can just fall back into, you know, what seems to pass for present-day political discourse and, you know, ridicule you and engage in sarcasm. But I'm attempting to have a conversation for the very reason that I do love you and I'm concerned for you as a fellow human being and want what is best for you. And so if that is not kind of there on the ground floor, then again, a conversation is not going to proceed in the way that it really needs to proceed, and it's certainly not going to proceed to the goal that a conversation is meant to have.
When things turn sour in these conversations, Christians will often encounter kind of facile arguments like, if you don't want to have an abortion, don't have one. If you don't support gay marriage, don't get married to someone of the same sex. They all come down to Christians should not be imposing their religious beliefs on others. How would you advise one of our listeners to respond to that little parlay?
Yeah, gosh. I don't have a short response, but let me offer a couple of things. I mean, if we can go back to someone like Aristotle in the classical tradition, when they talk about the discipline of rhetoric, you know, of speaking well, they'll refer to things like the importance of ethos and pathos and logos. And at ethos, you can probably tell, you know, sounds a little bit like our word ethics. And the import there is that if you're going to converse with someone in an attempt to persuade them, then your kind of character is important. You have to be perceived as the kind of person who knows what he's talking about and is worth listening to because he's trustworthy. So, with that in mind, kind of flippant bumper sticker responses, at least unintentionally, give the impression that, well, if you're resorting to those kinds of cliches, you're probably not the person who really knows what he's talking about and hasn't done the homework to understand the issues. And so a certain kind of credibility is lost. So something like that is important. But with respect to this fear that, you know, Christians are attempting to impose their moral code on others, one of the important things about conversation, another classical author, Cicero, really astutely said that there are two ways of settling disputed questions. One is by discussion, the other is by force. And kind of echoing Aristotle, he says the one is characteristic of men, the second of brutes. And so I think what we might want to emphasize is that, no, the reason that we're having this conversation, whether it's an informal conversation or whether it's the kind of conversation that goes on in the House of Representatives or in the Senate, is because we think that it's proper to converse, to persuade, to reach agreement by intellectual means, rather than to resort to coercion and to, you know, impose our will upon you. We want your will to be the same as ours, and that's why we're doing our best to engage you in conversation, so that we can reach an agreement and make decisions together.
Finally, then, we've talked about Aristotle. You just mentioned Cicero. Can we, in fact, even we Christians in the 21st century, learn a little something from these ancient pagans who actually had to do this on the ground every day in the places where they lived, in their communities?
I think we can, and I'd go even further than that, that we can learn both from their successes and their failures. So one of the things that almost everybody knows about Martin Luther himself is that he, you know, quite regularly, you know, criticized Aristotle. Now, what most people don't understand is that he did that in a very particular context, and especially criticized the abuse of Aristotle. But our Lutheran confessions actually say this, somewhat surprisingly, that Aristotle wrote about civil morals in such a way that nothing further about the topic needs to be demanded. Now, maybe there's a little hyperbole there, but what they're getting at is, you know, if we're just asking questions about how to live, you know, quote-unquote, civilly righteous lives, how to externally and outwardly obey the law and be what people would consider good people, then, yeah, reading Aristotle is entirely sufficient for that. Reading Cicero is great for that, because we're talking about external civic righteousness, not about the gospel and the righteousness of Christ that's imputed to us by faith. So, yes, there's plenty to be learned from them. And to be learned from their failures, I'm forgetting who said it. It might have been this fellow Mortimer Adler, who I reference in the Lutheran Witness article. But it's just this short kind of punchy phrase referring to the old Roman Republic. And the phrase is, you know, the Republic died when discussion ceased. And the allusion there is to, you know, the kind of political discussions that took place in the Senate. And, you know, the Republic died when the Senate lost its will and lost its ability to have those conversations. And so all decisions were made by an emperor who imposed his will by force. know, kind of reflecting that Ciceronian line that, man, we can either settle disputes by conversation, that's what the Senate did, or we can settle them by force, that's what the Empire did. And it's, I think it's quite a startling, perhaps, reminder to us that if in the 21st century we neglect our obligation to engage in reasonable political discourse, the only alternative, at least historically speaking, is the imposition of some will, an individual's will, or a majority's will, by force. And if that's something that history teaches us, it might give us good motive to kind of brush off our conversation skills and try to revive the art of political discourse.
Dr. Corey Moss is Associate Professor of History at Hillsdale College and author of a column for the Lutheran Witness magazine titled Political Community and Polite Communication. Dr. Moss, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Andrew Egger will be with us on the other side of the break. He's staff writer for The Dispatch. We're going to talk about reading and watching the news as a Lutheran. Stay tuned.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
In many ways, St. Matthew Lutheran Church in Bel Air, Maryland is just like any other Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Church. They have worship services each Sunday and reach out to their community, but one thing they don't do is pay their electric bill. Hello, this is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. And if you want to hear what St. Matthew actually did to eliminate their electric bill, just visit interesttime.org. That's interesttime.org.
Independent and in the black for 12 years and running, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Every knee will bow then. Every tongue will confess the things you already say and sing here in his congregation.
Morning Chapel from Cramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern, 7:30 Mountain, and 6:30 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
And peace will be as it is even this day upon you, the Israel of God. Amen.